Hello and welcome to another episode of ATP Analysis. And in this episode, we'll be delving into human performance and limitations to examine the effects of lack of oxygen, particularly the effect of lack of oxygen on the body, the various different physiological explanations for lack of oxygen, and what happens when hypoxia occurs at altitude. We'll be looking at the vital signs and symptoms, as well as the conditions during your career as a pilot that could lead to a hypoxic situation. So, hypoxia and oxygen, let's begin. Well, firstly, when we're talking about hypoxia, it's important to understand that we're talking really about oxygen. And in particular, when it comes to aviation, the pressure of oxygen or partial pressure of oxygen in the air. Now, the atmosphere is a gas and oxygen is what we are dependent on in order for us to be able to breathe. Now, most of the air around us is comprised of nitrogen, with oxygen making up 14% of the air that we breathe at sea level. Now, that's an important thing to consider. Now, we know that as altitude increases, the density of the area decreases, and that's due to the weight of the atmosphere pushing down on planet Earth, and indeed the effect of gravity, which holds the atmosphere onto the planet. So as we climb an aircraft during the cruise phase of flight, the percentage of oxygen available to us is decreasing. And it's that important phenomena that can cause hypoxia. Well, keeping things back down firmly on planet Earth, hypoxia is a medical condition occurring essentially when the body has too low oxygen inside it. And there's various different reasons or types of hypoxia. So the first one is known as hypoxic hypoxia. And this is where there is simply no oxygen available in the atmosphere to the human body, therefore causing a hypoxic state. The second type of hypoxia is known as histotoxic hypoxia, and that's where oxygen is available, but the cells, for example, can't use it. We then have what we call stagnant hypoxia, and that's where essentially we have no blood flow to the cells. For example, that could cause death of certain bodily tissues. And finally, we have hypemic hypoxia, and that's where the blood can't carry sufficient oxygen around it. So four main types of hypoxia there to be aware of. And indeed, the question bank may ask various different questions posed at, for example, if you look at one of the questions in the question bank, it goes into alcohol and excessive alcohol consumption is an example of which type of hypoxia. And in that case, it could cause histotoxic hypoxia, i.e. there is oxygen in the body, but the cells are unable to use it, particularly in areas that may be damaged due to alcohol abuse. One of the main symptoms for hypoxia is cyanosis, and it's this symptom that causes the blue appearance that we may see, particularly in the lips area and the fingertips. So that is a symptom, a classic symptom, and always one to look for, particularly in questions pertaining to hypoxia. Regarding hypoxia, the onset of it is what we call insidious, which means it can actually creep up on you without you noticing. And one of the first things that you must do if you suspect hypoxia, either within yourself or a colleague, is to immediately don the emergency oxygen. As hypoxia sets in, the symptoms are such that you may experience difficulty in concentrating. That is a classic symptom. Degradation of reasoning and perceptive functions is also a classic symptom. Impaired judgment, mood changes, and euphoria. Again, these are all classic symptoms, and it's one of those, particularly the impairment of judgment, is the main reason why this is so insidious and essentially can prove fatal, because you can actually become unaware that the body has entered a hypoxic state. It can also cause drowsiness and lethargy, as well as lightheadedness, dizziness, and nausea. Indeed, as the symptoms progressively particularly on set, the hypoxia gets less, gets worse with oxygen availability less inside the body, particularly in a state of hypoxic hypoxia, which is one of the most common ones that may affect aircrew, for example, in a decompression. This is what we risk essentially creeping up on us, which ultimately can incapacitate an individual and prove fatal for yourself and the safety of the aircraft. Any altitude above 10,000 feet, you are required to wear oxygen. And this is one of the reasons why the cabin is pressurized to around 8,000 feet to ensure that there is sufficient oxygen available in order to keep the crew happily functional in their obviously day-to-day duties. So there are a couple of thresholds that it's important that we're aware of when we're talking about hypoxia, availability of oxygen, particularly when climbing an aircraft. 5,000 feet is our first threshold, and this is the night vision threshold. Night vision starts to become adversely affected or degraded when altitudes exceed 5,000 feet. Following that, we then reach 7,000 feet, and 7,000 feet is the reaction threshold. It's above 7,000 feet that we now start to see an impairment in the way that the individual is able to operate the aircraft. Judgment becomes affected, and we definitely start to see the onset of hypoxia starting to kick in. And you'll notice this is right in between the altitude where the cabin then is actually pressurized to. The disturbance threshold occurs between 10 to 12,000 feet. And it's at this point that breathing air now becomes significantly lower. The body's defense mechanisms begin to generate cardiovascular and respiratory responses to give some protection against hypoxia. Beyond the 10 to 12,000 feet threshold, the body struggles to cope, and even at short exposures at this particular altitude can result in impaired judgment, memory, and lack of alertness. Short-term memory may also be impaired above 12,000 feet. Drowsiness, fatigue, and headaches can also kick in, starting to become a problem. As you continue then to climb the aircraft, you'll pass through 22,000 feet. This is the point where oxygen saturation starts to fall as low as 65 to 60%. With oxygen saturations as low as 60 to 65%, your cognitive function, your ability to mentally perform, is severely degraded. The individual will show very quickly signs of confusion, unconsciousness, and possible incapacitation very quickly and often without warning. Again, these altitudes are variable depending, obviously, on the atmosphere. However, they are the key main thresholds that we should be aware of. In the event of decompression, the first thing a pilot should do is immediately don the oxygen and descend the aircraft without consideration to any other factor down to 10,000 feet. This then ideally descending again to the 8,000 foot threshold, where we know there is sufficient oxygen available to sustain life. The oxygen process in terms of reaching or donning emergency oxygen is really, really important. So symptoms surrounding hypoxia, difficulty in concentrating, degradation of reasoning, perception and function, impaired judgment and mood changes, onset of euphoria, drowsiness and lethargy, lightheadedness, dizziness, nausea, loss of muscle coordination. We then get onset of cyanosis. This is the bluing of extremities, fingertips, earlobes, and particularly areas with high blood supplies known as the lips, for example. Failure of basic senses, colour vision, which indeed itself, remember, vision becomes affected at the point you cross the night vision threshold, which remember is 5,000 feet. And then finally, unconsciousness, coma, and death. In regards to hypoxia, smoking, and particularly heavy smoking, hypoxia can onset much lower because you're already at an altitude of around 4,000 feet if you are a smoker itself. And that's because carbon monoxide, which is a byproduct of combustion, particularly incomplete combustion, and occurs during smoking, has a higher affinity for the hemoglobin inside the red blood cell, which displaces the amount of oxygen that can be carried by it. And it's important that you seriously consider your smoking if you are planning on pursuing a career as a pilot. Now, in terms of the time of useful consciousness, and this is another important area when it comes to hypoxia that is assessed, the time of useful consciousness is essentially the time or the length of time during which an individual can act with both mental and physical efficiency and alertness. The time of useful consciousness is measured from the moment he or she is exposed to hypoxia, and it varies with altitude. Approximate times of useful consciousness for sudden disconnection from sea level partial pressures of oxygen are as follows. So for an individual at 20,000 feet, they will have a time of useful consciousness of 30 minutes. At 30,000 feet, that becomes 1 to 2 minutes. At 35,000 feet, that becomes 30 to 90 seconds. And at 40,000 feet, that is 15 to 20 seconds. So a rapid decompression occurring at 40,000 feet is going to give an individual 15 to 20 seconds before the signs of hypoxia, remember, insidious in nature, will become accelerated in the individual. And within 15 to 20 seconds, the useful consciousness window of that person will elapse, rendering that person subject to the side effects of hypoxia, of which those could be euphoria, lack of judgment, impaired motor coordination, which indeed at that altitude could render an aircraft in a very dangerous situation. Another factor to consider regarding hypoxia is those that give blood. Now, aircrew themselves are advised not to give blood, and if they do, should wait a period of 24 hours before a particular duty. So, hypoxia is the absence of oxygen inside the body for a variety of different reasons, of which we've already covered. We're now going to talk about hyperventilation, which is not to be confused with hypoxia. Hyperventilation is essentially an unwarranted increase in the amount of carbon dioxide in the blood. Carbon dioxide is acidic. This is why fizzy drinks are acidic in terms of their pH. And the pH or chemoreceptors inside the arteries of the circulatory system are responsible for monitoring the pH of the blood. And indeed, its carbon dioxide levels are the main indicator for pH of the blood, how much carbon dioxide is in it, as this is a direct byproduct of the ventilation respiration process. Internal respiration, remember, being the chemical reaction inside the cell that uses atmospheric oxygen and glucose to generate energy, carbon dioxide and water. If the carbon dioxide levels in the blood begin to rise, this is sensed by the heart, which causes a step up in the cardiac rate, as well as the rate of ventilation or breathing. Hyperventilation, therefore breathing too frequently, is caused by elevated carbon dioxide levels in the blood. If this occurs, it leads to a reduction in the diameter of the arteries supplying the brain, and this then within itself further increases the rate of breathing, which then essentially causes a increase in the shortness of breath and the speed at which you're breathing, which then within itself triggers hyperventilation. And that within itself causes narrowing of the arteries, which causes the shortness of breath, which increases the rate and depth of breathing. And the cycle becomes self-fulfilling. To break the cycle, an individual should breathe slowly. Try breathing through one nostril or speak loud and slowly, encouraged by another individual, to try to break that spiraling cycle of escalating increase in breathing rate and depth of breathing. Signs of hyperventilation are tingling, shortness of breath, poor coordination, and deterioration in the vision. It's important to remember for hyperventilation that cyanosis, that's the bluing of fingertips, earlobes and lips, are not considered a symptom and will not occur despite them being a red herring in the ATPL questions. Hypoxia usually will not onset below 10,000 feet. If you use that as a rule in the ATPL questions, if the question posed suggests or indicate that you are below 10,000 feet, assume it is hyperventilation and treat accordingly. If the symptoms onset, assume hypoxia, but consider hyperventilation. So above 10,000 feet, it's hypoxia, but could be hyperventilation. Below 10,000 feet, most likely hyperventilation, but could be hypoxia in a limited number of situations. Dizziness is one of the first symptoms of hyperventilation, and that's important that you are aware of that as a lookout symptom. Again, medically, if in any doubt, treat as hypoxia, because hypoxia kills, and give the individual 100% oxygen with the aircraft descending below 10,000 feet. So hypoxia and hyperventilation, remember hypoxia is H-Y-P-O, meaning low, hyperventilation is breathing too deeply. So some quick questions or poser questions then for you to have a go at having listened to this particular podcast. Aircrew are at risk of which type of hypoxia? What is the name of the gas produced in smoking that elevates your risk of developing hypoxia? At what altitude in feet does night vision become affected by oxygen in the atmosphere? What is the time of useful consciousness at 40,000 feet? What is the useful consciousness in time at 30,000 feet? At which altitude should you descend below if you suspect the onset of hypoxia? An aircraft is cruising at 9,000 feet. A patient rapidly begins to show symptoms of dizziness, tingling of the extremities, anxiety, and impaired performance. How should you treat this passenger? Internal respiration is explained as what? So there we go. In this podcast, we have covered hypoxia and hyperventilation, the main phenomena that can be caused by working at altitude, particularly risking the ability for flight and aircrew to perform and discharge their obligations safely. Remember, hypoxia is insidious, and make sure you know the difference between hypoxia and hyperventilation. You could join me for another episode of ATPL Assist over on our website, atplassist.co.uk, or otherwise on Apple Podcasts.